Welcome back to the Business News Hour. Next up, we go out to lunch at Vino 209 with Joshua V. Barr. Joshua is the director of the Des Moines Civil and Human Rights Commission. Our purpose? We're going to be talking about issues of equality, equity, and something called Bridging the Gap. It's a public reveal that's happening at the Des Moines Central Library on September 17th. Now, lots of people have been involved in this so far, and you're invited to attend. Click through and join us as we go out to lunch at Vino 209 in the historic Valley Junction of West Des Moines. The Business News Hour is made possible through the support of Taro International for training in a myriad of subjects from effective communication to executive presence. Achieve, lead, and outclass with Taro International. TERO.com.
Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Arion, human resources and more for businesses and nonprofits of any size. AURION.com. And Action Coach Monty Wyatt and Live to Lead with John Maxwell, Carly Fiorina, Daniel Pink, and Deborah Searle. That's Live, the number 2, LeadDesMoines.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. We are out to lunch with Joshua V. Barr at Vino 209 in the historic Valley Junction of West Des Moines. So what do you think so far of the place?
Oh, it's neat. When I pulled up, I said I hadn't seen this place. You told me it was new, so looks nice. I see the desserts over there. I might try something before I leave, but I'm vegan. So.
And did you notice the window that goes to the outside is open?
Right.
So this is like a cafe on the street, but you're not on the streets. Such a cool place.
Right.
Vino 209, our host for our Out to Lunch series this month. Joshua, you're the director of the Des Moines Civic and Human Rights Commission. We talked about that in our three questions. You are originally from the Carolinas, yes?
Yes, South Carolina. Sumter, South Carolina, to be
exact. And I imagine that your thoughts are with people in that part of the country because the hurricane's on the way.
Right. My mother told me they canceled school for her granddaughter, my niece, all week. And the hurricane's supposed to hit probably only like Thursday. They don't know, but... You know, we hadn't honestly been hit since Hurricane Hugo since 1989. Typically, hurricanes miss us and either go to North Carolina or Florida. But I hope all is well back home.
Let's talk a little bit about what it is that you do as the director of the Civil and Human Rights Commission. What do you do down there?
Well, ultimately, our goal is to build mutual understanding and respect amongst all persons in Des Moines by advancing equality, promoting civil human rights and justice for all the persons in the city of Des Moines. How we do that is we primarily do that through investigations and community engagement. What we do is when persons have individual complaints of discrimination, whether it be an apartment complex or their employer, we investigate those complaints and see what we can do to resolve that and make people whole again and give them some sense of justice. Our goal is to advance opportunity and justice for all persons in Des Moines, whether you are passing through or you lived here your whole life or you're a transplant. So we do investigation, but we also do a lot of community engagement and equity work. Bridging the Gap is about equity work. So we train people on what their rights are. We have dialogues with community trying to identify issues so that we can bring those to the proper persons if we identify issues.
How should business people, corporations, how should they view the Civil and Human Rights Commission?
They should view them as an ally that's focused on making sure that all persons have the opportunity to move up the socioeconomic ladder, because that's the ultimate goal. And if people are being discriminated against and people don't feel welcome, people leave, people take their dollars with them, and people feel discriminated against on the job, that's a lawsuit, which costs more money. So our job is to train people, including corporations and businesses, on what their rights are so we can build a stronger community where we have a community of taxpayers, not tax eaters, and people that feel welcome.
I think that's a great way to look at the Civil and Human Rights Commission as an ally, not necessarily as an adversary.
Right.
But so many times people look at a Civil Human Rights Commission as an adversary because something's happened that shouldn't be happening.
Right. But that's why we have to be more so proactive rather than reactive. Yeah. And we can only be proactive by working together. And I think, you know, there is that stigma of an adversary. But that's only because, once again, going back to something we said earlier, people have these stereotypes about who you are, what you do, and who you represent. But we represent all people because ultimately we want what's best for the community. And what's best for the community is advancement for all.
Joshua V. Barr is our guest. We're out to lunch at Vino 209. And by the way, the place is packed today. Maybe us coming here has helped.
All right.
Who knows? You were talking earlier in our three questions about economic opportunity and equity and the opportunity to move forward. I have long held to the belief, Joshua, that the only way to break a cycle of dependence or poverty or whatever it happens to be, social economic issues, is through business, is through economic success for individuals.
Right.
Would that be accurate?
I would agree. I think, once again, trying to finish the dream, Martin Luther King in 1968 made a transition from just doing traditional civil and human rights work to starting a poor people's campaign where he wanted persons, poor whites, blacks, Latinos, natives as well, to unite together to improve our economic conditions so that we could all be contributing persons to the United States of America. And that's really one of the things that I think about when I talk about the unfinished dream. I think the problem is economics, and the solution is also economics. So how do we address the economics of the situation so that we can move together as a community?
And Joshua, you are an attorney.
Yes, I'm a recovering attorney.
A recovering attorney?
But honestly, one of the key reasons why I'm really focused on social economics is because all my degrees are in business. Bachelor's, law degree, concentration in business, and I have an MBA. So I really believe that business can be a solution to some of the issues. And one of the key things that really that stems from, not pulling it out of the air, I'm really stemming from one of the things that really impact me to be more socially conscious was Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane Katrina really woke me up to, like, okay, this dream of we don't look in color, but we see only in green is not true. But we have to improve the wallets and the pocketbooks of all persons, because a lot of those people that were in those communities were there because of the social economic conditions that had happened for generations. And a lot of that was put on them because of the color of their skin. And one of the things that I saw through Hurricane Katrina was when government shut down, business actually stepped up and started helping those people, getting them the supplies they need, opening up their doors so people could put food on the table, et cetera. When government shut down, business stepped up. And it wasn't perfect, not by any means, but business and government have a role to play together in improving the economic outcomes of all persons in all communities.
Joshua V. Barr, we are out to lunch talking about his work with the Des Moines Civil and Human Rights Commission. Joshua, I should have asked this in the three questions segment, but I did earlier, and I thought it was seminal to who you are.
Mm-hmm.
What does the V stand for in your name?
Stands for Virgil, which is a name that stems down from generation to generation. One of my great-great-grandfather's name was Virgil Barr. Barr is slave name, but Virgil was his name. He was freed, and he kept that name. His wife, Daphne, as well. So Daphne and Virgil are two names that are passed down from generation to generation. My grandfather was Joseph B. Barr, so that's JVB, and I also have the JVB as well. My grandfather was probably one of the biggest influencers in my life, and he always told me, get yourself right and then help others.
There it is. Joshua V. Barr, ladies and gentlemen, Virgil. Good stuff. Okay, let's talk about bridging the gap for a bit, shall we? It's not enough, as you just said, to go out there and adjudicate wrongs. You have to be proactive in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And off mic, you told me that you've seen in fiscal year last year about 168% increase in the number of contacts that you've had with citizens in Des Moines. That's on the bad side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the complaints. Where did bridging the gap come from? Where did this idea to become more involved proactively come from?
Honestly, it came from going to a lot of panels with government officials and police in particular, a lot of listening, going to city council meetings and hearing people yell and berate people. And I kind of realized that people weren't listening. They weren't listening. And a lot of times they were saying the same thing, but just saying it in a different way. Mm. And so I told my chair, Isaiah Knox, and I told a few people, including the chief of police, like, I'm not doing this traditional, we come do panels and sit at tables and listen to people just yell, and there's no solution. It's just a venting session. And some people are coming with swords and other people coming in with shields. And in a literal sense, where some people are coming just to get their, you know, just to have a catharsis where they feel good, they're able to yell and say what they want, and other people leave very defensive and not wanting to work with those people. And so we really wanted to bridge the gap between community and government and try to improve the listening and the relationships. So we did the dialogues. We did 10 formal dialogues with community leaders, influencers, as well as just community members, where we had about 16 persons. I use 16 loosely because sometimes we had 20, 25, 30 in one. Wow. Some people just showed up. They weren't invited, but that's fine. That's fine. So we had 16 formal listening, 10 formal listening sessions, comprised of a mix of community members, community leaders, and influencers. And what we did was we really wanted to talk about, how do we strengthen public safety? How do we strengthen justice? How do we strengthen opportunity here in the Des Moines area? And honestly, 9 out of the 10 discussions, there was no yelling. There was nobody who raised their voice. There were just people talking. Now, once again, sometimes things got contentious, meaning, you know, there was some disagreement on how we approach or how we address the issue. But I think at the end of the day, most people were there because they actually cared and wanted to see some sort of improvement on a community-wide level. So those discussions happened. We took the 200-plus ideas that were given from those discussions.
200 ideas.
Yeah, and kind of formulated those into actual programs or practices that we could engage in as a community, which we're going to unveil on September 17th at the Central Library at Des Moines. And it is a drop-in, so you can come in any time between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. and come and view the ideas. We'll have facilitators at each idea talking to you about what the idea means. There'll be a visual, the art, as well as demonstrating what some best practices and what some other communities are doing.
So this is not just a one-off. This is a program that you hope to actually come up with ideas and solutions
right.
to some of the issues that are
right.
out there. Now, one of the things, I was at one of those listening sessions, and I was so taken by the fact that Dana Wingert was there, mm-hmm. The chief of police. There were some activists there from the various communities. There were educators there. There were people of faith that were there as well. And it was a very civil discussion
right.
on some very pithy issues.
Right, exactly.
And exactly. And so you have then distilled all of these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And at the reveal that happens on the 17th of September, what happens there?
Well, we want people to come out and view all 9 pieces. We want you to really go through. It's an art gallery style event. So come view all 9 pieces. We have facilitators that are talking about what each piece means. And a lot of it's on the nose. I mean, you should be able to interpret it. But they'll give you some background into how it came about. After you review all 9 pieces, we want you to actually vote and rank what you believe that government officials should prioritize. And notice I say government because a lot of these things don't just affect the city of Des Moines. There will be Des Moines Public Schools as well as maybe Polk County, et cetera. So we want you to vote on your top 3 ideas and rank them 1, 2, 3. Number 1 being, I think this should be the most important thing we should focus on as we move towards 2040. And I mentioned 2040 because there was a report by MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization here in the Des Moines area, that says we'll be more diverse by 2040.
Oh, yes.
And the question is, are we ready to meet those challenges? Because most of the growth that's coming to the Des Moines area is coming to the immigrant population, to the transplant population, most of it being, honestly, non-white. So we need to focus on, are we going to be welcoming to them, not only to get them here, but to get them to stay and to be a part of the community and acculturate, meaning adapt their culture to the culture that's here so we can build a stronger community.
We have some history with that, that it has worked.
Mm-hmm.
If people have really fostered those ideas of equality and acceptance. We saw it with the Thai Dam, for example.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And there's a whole community of people that have started all kinds of businesses, been very successful. We've seen it also in the Bosnian community,
mm-hmm.
where individuals have come here and started business from construction to, well, all kinds of things, restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
But it is all about, at the end of the day, I suspect, people who are maybe uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
with populations that are different from them.
Right, right.
So after you have a vote, you've got nine things to mm-hmm. take a look at. What happens next?
So after that, we're not just going to stop on September 17th. We're going to take it into some community groups, ask them to look at it and vote, because we know that we're not going to get everybody on September 17th. We'll never get everybody, but we need to take it to some of the communities that are dealing with some of these challenges, give them the opportunity to look at it, vote and rank. And after that, we're going to bring it back to our commission. We have a 7-member commission of the Civil and Human Rights Commission. Strategize with them on based on the vote on how do we make these things practical. Because
right.
because right now, the ideas that we unveiled are pie in the sky, lofty goals and dreams. But then we got to get to reality. How feasible is this? Who's going to house it? How much is it going to cost? And then kind of formulate something real based on what people want to prioritize. And we want to bring that to our partners in the city and the county and the schools. And then we'll bring it back out to the community so they can view the ideas and give some more input. That's the key thing we want. We want input. I don't think we want things that are...
So you don't want a top-down thing saying,
right,
this is what we're going
to
do.
Right, right, right. There has to be input on all sides. Because once we identify what people prioritize, we have to identify what's feasible. But then we also have to have those conversations with community about how do we actually implement and make this work based on your desires, your needs, and how we move forward as a community. So we'll bring it back to our commission. And when I say that, we have an annual meeting with the commission and the city council. And maybe that's where we'll unveil the votes and what people saw to the community. And then we try to figure out, how do we make this feasible? How do we make this work with the city, with the police department, with the fire department, with community development, with Des Moines Public Schools, with Polk County, with DART? Now, a lot of people would be affected by a lot of these things that are going to happen.
Joshua V. Barr, we are out to lunch at Vino 209 talking about bridging the gap. So, Joshua, you talked about there's nine various things, and individuals are going to come to the Central Library on the 17th. And vote
mm-hmm.
on what they think is most important. Now, I know you don't want to reveal all of those things, but mm-hmm. can you give us a hint? Can you give us a taste of what's going to happen?
Right. I can do that. Like I said, I don't want to reveal all nine, but I'll give people an example of what they'll see, like sort of programming. So one of the key things that we talked about was that presently city government is not reflective of the community. Presently, about 73% of Des Moines is European descent, 10% is African descent, another 14% has some sort of Latino heritage or descent, and then you have a 4% are Asian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if you look at the makeup of city government in the police force, it is about 90% European, and the numbers for other groups are not as representative based on their amount of population. So the goal is, how do we make it more diverse so people feel like the government is a reflection of me? So we had an idea called DMPD, Diversified and Inclusive. And what that is we would have an engagement from elementary school to middle school to high school, talking to people about what it means to be a guardian of the city, a public safety officer. And in elementary school is more so an introduction. In middle school, you'll take a course on public safety, criminal justice. And if you like that, you can go to high school, take some courses in 9th and 10th grade on criminal justice, public safety. In 11th and 12th grade, you would literally engage in the Des Moines Public School Criminal Justice Academy at Central Academy, where you take courses on criminal justice and hopefully you get college credit for those. And if you decide to continue on, you can go to DMACC, get a scholarship where you would study criminal justice. And not just study, but it also teach you how to take the written portion of the police exam. It also teach you how to do the physical portion of the police exam, to run, to jog, etc. And we also put you in an apprenticeship program to keep you engaged. That's the apprenticeship is the forensics, the 911 calls, so you're always connected to what you're doing. And eventually, if you graduate from DMACC and you want to be a Des Moines police officer, and also a Des Moines public servant in general, but a Des Moines police officer specifically, we talked about strengthening public safety at the dialogues. But if you went through the program and wanted to live in Des Moines, we give you a housing incentive, a down payment on your home, or a lower interest rate to live in the community that you work in. So we increase the positive first encounter. So that's just one example of an idea
that's
that came
huge,
about
Joshua.
From the community.
That is huge.
And that's community driven.
See, all of those things. This is what happens when you start listening to people rather than just shouting.
Right.
Joshua V. Barr, we're out to lunch at Vino 209 talking about bridging the gap. That is seminal to success. So if you start at a very young age and you get individuals acclimated to public safety and you follow that through the educational path with the opportunity to have apprenticeship programs so you're never losing touch, so you're always in the mix.
Exactly.
The hope, and then after you do that, you get a stipend for moving into the neighborhood that you're going to protect.
Right.
Wow.
And not necessarily the neighborhood, but the city that you want to work in. Because, you know, there was some discussion with the cops. I don't want to know if I want to live in the neighborhood I actually patrol. Like, no, we don't have to. You can live in the city. And because we want people to be a part of the community that they serve. Not just in a give me my paycheck capacity, but in the engagement with people and saying, hello, neighbor, how are you doing? So this is just one idea of nine that really came from community discussion. And it's all really community-driven. None of these ideas are ideas we fetch from the sky. There is one socioeconomic idea that's not government, that not necessarily police-related that I'm biased towards.
No kidding.
But these ideas are really community-driven, and we really want people. We want to catch with that idea. We want to catch them while they're young and keep them engaged. Because when you as you start to grow up, you start to gain certain biases and stereotypes and prejudices. And if you only engage people at the time it's time to hire, they've already had I'm not going to do that. That's not what I want to do. And we don't just want to engage them as police are. We want to engage city planners. We want to engage people that work in community development and economic development and city engineers and city IT persons and neighborhood zoning and inspections. Because a lot of times, once again, going back to education and something we talked about earlier, nobody really talks about local government and the impact the local government has on you on a day-to-day basis. But local government has more of an effect on you on a day-to-day basis than the federal government ever will. You know, sometimes people complain about potholes. Like, man, I don't know what Obama doing. Like, Obama don't care about your pothole. Trump don't care about your pothole. That's the mayor. That's city council. That's the city manager. That's public works. And we have to teach people the impact of local government. And it affects you more on a daily basis than other forms of government do.
And how to perhaps, if I can take that a little step further, how to perhaps engage your local government.
That's right. That's right.
And it's not going to meetings and shouting and hollering and doing those things. It is about finding some type of common ground that you can work together towards a solution, I would suspect.
Right. Exactly. No, I 100% agree.
Wow. Joshua V. Barr, we are talking about Bridging the Gap, and that's an event that's happening on September 17th. This is not, Joshua, a one and done. This is not a nine and done. This is long term, it sounds to me.
Exactly. And we have to be honest and realistic and say that, because a lot of people want quick fix solutions.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work in this game. People have to understand that yes, some things can be addressed quickly, but when you're dealing with government, when you're dealing with power, when you're dealing with money and you're dealing with capital, you know, there is a give and take. There is a compromise. There is a negotiation that has to come forth so we can see all of the community progress. And going back to what you said, but if you just walk in a room and start yelling, you've already tuned people out.
Yeah.
So it's really time for us to engage, strategically look at the long term and figure out how we're going to move forward and what we need to do in order to build that relationship, though, so that all community has the ability to advance.
Liz is here with the food.
Looks good.
You should have had some.
That looks good. Now, I'm vegan. I can't eat a cheese sandwich.
Okay. Joshua V. Barr, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about bridging the gap. As we take a look at the longevity of something like this, one of the things that we hear from constantly is people do studies and they do recommendations and then they put it in a nice binder and it goes up on a shelf somewhere. How do you drive this?
How do we drive what part?
Well, when the reveal is done and the neighbors have said and the community has said and they say, okay, these are the three things that we want to work on moving forward. How do you keep that on the burner?
Well, I think number one,
stakeholders.
Yes. And I think it is about community engagement. I think it is about being transparent and letting people know what the process is, and teaching people the impact of local government, how they can stay involved. Because at the end of the day, this is not a civil and human rights led initiative. The dialogues may have been an idea, but at the end of the day, the ideas came from community. So we have to teach community the process of local government, understanding how local government works so they can stay engaged with their local official, not yelling, but inquiring and having conversation about, hey, where are we in the next steps? And knowing where the ideas fall. So as someone who has also been a professor at a university, I understand that people draft up plans and they're operating in ivory towers and it's separate from the community. But we've actually taken this to the community, and we want to keep the community engaged on the process throughout. There will be times where it's quiet, and that's when you're in that planning mode, that storming, norming, forming phase. But at the end of the day, we want this to be a community-led initiative on how we move forward as a community. How do we bridge the gap and improve relationships and build relationships here?
I think that's important. And one of the things, and maybe it's a prejudice of mine, but I believe government as a whole, particularly city government, does two things really well. The number one thing that they do really well is create rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. And the number two thing that they do really well is attempt to enforce those rules and regulations.
Right.
It's how to communicate through public relations, through conversation, through discussion, through whatever means it is, without a lot of gobbledygook about what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's at the end of the day. And so when we turn things like this over to the government, sometimes, you know, city government in particular, I just hope it doesn't get lost.
Right, and I do too. And that's why, once again, we have to keep the community informed on where we are, what we're doing, how they fit into it, who those identify key stakeholders who can keep the flame burning, but a torch burning, but at the same time making sure that we do. Because the goal isn't just to initiate the ideas, but the goal is to build a better understanding and bridging the gap in relationships. So once we go through this process, you identify who the leaders are in government. You identify how the government process works. You can stay better informed and follow up. Because local government is something they don't teach in schools.
No.
They don't teach it at all. And I think that's one of those things, going back to what we talked about earlier about education, is how we need to better educate and actually have public relations as well.
And become involved. You know, one of the things, Joshua, and I know that you are an active voter. Those of us who take all this stuff seriously, we are active voters. And not that I looked at your voting record or anything like that, but it is kind of remarkable. And I didn't look at your voting record. I should have, now that I'm thinking about it. But one of the things that is so interesting is how many people are not in the process. They're not taking advantage. I mean, we had a school board election where less than 8% of the population
went out
to vote. We have other city elections and things like that where the minority of individuals come out to vote. And how important is that to be engaged?
I mean, I think it's very important. I think it goes back to what we're saying about the pothole and understanding who's responsible for the things that affect me.
That's a great one.
So whose job is it to deal with the things that affect me on a day-to-day basis? We have issues with traffic. You have issues with infrastructure. A lot of that is local government. And local includes maybe county as well, not just city, but also county. So I think once again, one of the errors of education is that we don't teach people the actual tools they need to survive and thrive in the United States, in the state that you live in, and understanding how, you know, the city council, city manager dynamic works. It's not taught.
How important is it, Joshua, to build coalition?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think...
With like-minded people,
yes,
perhaps.
Yes. I think that's one of the most important things. I think, once again, going back to education, one of the fallacies or errors of education is that we operate and teach, especially history, from a hero-shiro mindset, meaning only one person comes in and solves the issues. But that's a fallacy. Martin Luther King did not just walk into town to say, hey, I have a dream. And everybody, okay, let's get on board with the dream. But no, he worked with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. That was the organization that he worked with. And they strategized. And they didn't strategize alone. They strategized with SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinated Committee. They strategized with CORE, the Congress on Racial Equity. Strategized with NAACP. Strategized with Urban Leadership, the Urban League. And they work together. Sometimes they worked apart as different entities, but they also worked together for the greater good. Lincoln never picked up a gun. It was soldiers that fought in the Civil War, privates and generals like Sherman and Ulysses S. Grant that fought and picked up the gun that had the chains that we had. And even Jesus had 12 disciples. So I want everybody to understand, you can't do any of this work alone. Even the Savior of certain individuals, certain religious systems, had people that he worked with to get things done. So you have to build allies. You have to build coalitions. And you have to learn how, when someone is actually on your side. You know, sometimes people, city council member may come and listen. That's not the time to yell. That's the time to say thank you for coming. We really appreciate you coming to listen to our concerns. And we hope that we can engage with you more and that we actually build a relationship where we can actually improve and address some of the conditions that concern us. It's not the time to build enemies. It's the time to make allies.
Joshua, I've got a final question for you. And this is really, it's not a trick question at all, but it is very, I think it's very important. What happens when people are not listened to and when governments or business or others start to turn a deaf ear to the pain and frustration of other people?
Well, I think that's when crime and violence and riots come into play. You know, there's a saying that violence is just a symptom of a bigger problem. And I think those bigger problems is not listening to the concerns and economic plights and lack of opportunity for certain communities. So what Bridging the Gap is designed to do is to look at these issues so you can actually deal with the issues of violence and crime. We've actually seen for the Des Moines metro area, the greater Des Moines, West Des Moines metro area, we've seen an uptick in the past five years over in crime and violent crime. And when you look at the schools and 70%, almost 70% of the students are on free and reduced lunch, those are signs of poverty. And if you look at the employment record, we have a low employment rate.
Except, in various communities.
In various communities. So if you look at poverty, but people are working, there's a disconnect. We got a lot of people working, but a lot of people in poverty. So how do we address these issues so that people have the opportunity to advance? So people aren't looking at alternative ways of trying to get the things that they desire and that they need. We need to improve the choice options because your choices are only as good as your options. We need to improve that. And how do we build a community that is caring and compassionate and wants to see everyone succeed so that we can address these underlying issues that bubble up whenever one incident happens? It is like, whoa, where do these people come from? Well, no, they've had these concerns for a long time. But now let's take this moment. Let's bridge the gap. Let's grow together as the city, as a school, as a county, as a community, and work together to build a better community so that we can move forward as we move towards 2040.
I think you practiced this.
No, I didn't actually.
You were supposed to be gone today.
Right. I was supposed to be in D.C. I wasn't even supposed to do this today.
Ladies and gentlemen, his name is Joshua V. Barr. He is the director of the Des Moines Civil and Human Rights Commission. We've been talking about Bridging the Gap. It is on September 17th. We will have links up on the radio blog for that. It's between 6 and 8 p.m. at the Central Library.
Drop in any time between that. You don't have to stay the whole time. We'll have food there for those who are worried about being hungry. We'll feed you.
Wow. A double whopper. Thank you so much, Joshua.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Once again, that was Joshua V. Barr, the director of the Des Moines Civil and Human Rights Commission, in our Out to Lunch segment. We've got links for Bridging the Gap up on our radio blog. Inside on Business of the News Hour is a production of our advertising and marketing agency, Inside Advertising, Marketing, and Communications. The voice of Inside on Business is Hunter Pease. Sales and marketing falls to Aaron Libby. Our engineer is Chap Ramsey. And the music you're listening to right now was created exclusively for the Business News Hour by our friend James Goodlett from Jam Good Productions. Need some cool music for your original work? We can hook you up. For all the crew, my name is Michael Libby. Be safe, be well, be careful, but most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.